The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 430 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. That is a great way to interact with the show. Glad to be back. I had a fantastic little trip out to Pittsburgh. Got to see PNC Park. What a beautiful ballpark that is. Much more on my trip coming up. I think this will be one of the most memorable Olympics of our lifetime. I think people are going to be talking about these games for a long, long time. Look at the star power involved in these Olympic games. Phelps, Bolt, Ledecky, Biles, on and on and on. And Phelps and Bolt are saying this is it. They're done. This is their final Summer Olympics. Plus, you have the controversy with the site, the Zika virus, everything going on in Rio, another black eye for Rio. I'll get to that story coming up. But there's so much going on. We'll talk about all the swimming, the track and field, USA basketball, Hope Solo showing zero class after the U.S. women's soccer team was shocked by Sweden. Is anyone surprised that it was Hope Solo who made headlines there? You know, sometimes people just should not be allowed to talk. And she seems to be one of those people. To baseball, are the Marlins sunk? Big injury news out of Miami. And Jeff Fisher got called out, not by the Rams owner, not by the commish, but by his mom. Yes, indeed. That story is on the way. It's on episode number 430 of the Sports Report podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're with you Mondays on The Grizz. That is GrizzlyProductions.tv. And the show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. So please keep those five-star reviews coming there. We're going to start with this bizarre story involving Ryan Lochte, one of the best swimmers on the U.S. team. Lochte and three other American swimmers were robbed early Sunday by thieves who were posing as police officers who stopped their taxi and took their money. Lochte told NBC that one of the robbers actually put a gun to his head before taking his wallet. Now, thankfully, everybody's safe. Nobody was injured. But this was a real scary story. Lochte and his teammates were coming back to the Athletes Village. They were using a taxi. They were out at night. They were at the French team's hospitality house. And they were having a good time. But, you know, hey, they're grown men. The robbers approached the taxi. They took cash. They took credit cards. They did not take any Olympic medals. So that's good. Lochte, as I said, one of the best swimmers that we have, a 12-time Olympic medalist. He said, quote, "We got pulled over in the taxi, and these guys came out with a police badge, no lights, no nothing, just a badge. They pulled out their guns. They told the other swimmers to get down on the ground. They got down on the ground. I refused. I was like, we didn't do anything wrong, so I'm not getting down on the ground. Then the guy pulled out his gun, he cocked it, put it to my forehead, and he said, get down. He took our money, took my wallet, left my cell phone, and left my credentials." Now, there was a lot of confusion as this story broke early Sunday. And Facebook, Twitter, social media, they can be great. You can get a lot of really good information, and you can get it almost instantly. But it can also be bad because people don't have time to verify, double check some of these stories. And an IOC spokesman came out and said that reports of the robbery were absolutely not true. Said they were false, never happened. Even though Lochte's mom was telling media outlets exactly what happened. Oh, the IOC, I mean, I guess this is what we should expect from them. A big tip of the cap for what this spokesman did. Completely wrong. He later reversed what he had said and then did apologize. The sports minister in Brazil said the swimmers were outside their place of competition and outside past the appropriate time. He said no athlete had run into problems at the venues or in the athlete's village. Listen, these guys should be able to go out and not get stopped by people posing as cops and putting guns to their head. I mean, that is just ridiculous. And Brazil did use 85,000 soldiers to secure the games, twice as many as were used during the 2012 London Olympics. And then there have been some other stories. Now, you're not going to see them on prime time, but you'll find them if you really want to look for them. Other stories about violence. Last week, a Brazilian security officer was fatally shot. He took a wrong turn, went into a slum area, a very dangerous part of town, and he ended up getting shot to death. Two rowing coaches for Australia were attacked and robbed. Portugal's education minister was held up at knife point on a busy street. And in addition to that, stray bullets have twice landed in the equestrian venue. So we can joke about the color of the pool and how it's gone from blue to green. And, you know, if you want to say that too much was made of the Zika virus, that's fine. But when you're hearing stories about this, people being robbed at gunpoint, at knife point, stray bullets flying around, one security officer being killed, that's stuff you don't joke about. So some black eyes here as far as Rio goes. And other athletes have said, you know, they've had a great time, no trouble at all. Nathan Adrian, one of the swimmers for the U.S. squad, called it an amazing city. But there have been incidents. The Lochte thing obviously got a lot of attention because of who he is. Some of these other stories really have not been reported a lot. But things are happening over there. This is episode number 430 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows for you on Mondays. The show is free in the podcast section of iTunes. We have a lot more coming up. I need to vent on the U.S. men's basketball team. Not the women. They're playing great. Blowout City USA. But that is absolutely not the case for the U.S. men. We'll talk about Hope Solo. We'll get into Phelps and Ledecky and Bolt and a lot more coming up on the Sports Report. But first, I want to tell you about our great sponsor, and that is iHome. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. They are waterproof, they are rust-proof, and they're military-standard shock-proof. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome combines great value and exceptional quality. iHome also offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. So go to the website, look at all their great products, all of their apps, their accessories. That is iHomeAudio.com. iHomeAudio.com. iHome is the number one brand in digital speakers. The sound quality is the best, and their products look really cool. They look sharp as well, and the sound is the most important thing, and they have you covered there. The website, again, iHomeAudio.com. Moving on here on episode number 430. You know I'm a hoops junkie, so I got to weigh in on the U.S. men's basketball team. They won on Sunday, but another close game, 100-97 over France. And you know what I'm tired of hearing from a lot of the media bobbleheads out there? I'm tired of hearing about, well, such and such a country also has NBA players. Hold on here. timeout. The NBA players that a lot of these other countries have are role players. They are bench warmers in the NBA. They're guys getting a few minutes here and there. Now, there are some exceptions, like a Pau Gasol or a Tony Parker. More on him in a second. But some of these other NBA players, they're not superstars. Our team has Kevin Durant. Okay, our team has Kyrie Irving. Our team has Carmelo Anthony. We're talking about superstars in the NBA. We're not talking about role players here. We're not talking about guys who get 5 to 10 minutes off the bench. So I don't want to hear anymore about, well, these other teams have NBA players too. They're not even close to the same caliber. Not close. So that excuse needs to end. Klay Thompson, here's a bright spot. He was on fire against France, made 7 threes. He had 30 points, and they needed him because they only won by 3. The U.S. won its 50th straight tournament game, but the last 3, quite honestly, have not been impressive. The U.S. is 5-0, and they did wrap up first place in Group A. They will play in the quarterfinals on Wednesday. As for France, Tony Parker did not play. Not a minute, not a second. They sat him out with a toe injury. And every time that the Americans had a nice lead, France came back, chipping away. Fourth quarter, the French didn't even have their top players in. They had their subs in, and they made a big run. They got this down to 4. Durant had 17. In the previous game, he only took 4 shots. I don't know what that's all about. The game against Serbia, they also only won by 3, 94-91. And Serbia had a great look from 3 at the buzzer that would have sent the game to overtime. And Serbia, France, Australia, these are not powerhouse teams. They're good teams, but they're not, you know, Spain. They're a team you always have to look out for. Argentina, you know, teams like that. And to be just getting by here, back to Thompson. They had him in the starting lineup, then they took him out. Coach K put him back in, and man, did he come through. He had 5 threes in the third quarter alone. Before that, he was 4 for 26 in his first 4 games. 11 points in 4 games. 30 points in 1 game on Sunday. So that's good to see from one of the Splash Brothers there. But I'm watching this U.S. team. I see very little energy, no passion for the game, no killer instinct, too much one-on-one play, too much AAU ball, too much and-one mixtape stuff. And the teams they're playing, they play the game the right way, as Larry Brown likes to say. They share the ball. They cut. They're constantly moving. I mean, our defense looks bad. These are not 48-minute games. These are 40-minute games. And we gave up 97 points to France. Tony Parker did not even play. We gave up 91 to Serbia. You know, I mean, the defense here, backdoor cuts, easy layups. You know, it's just, it's tough to watch. It's frustrating. It's like, you know, they take a lead and then they just put it in cruise control. You know, like they're too cool for school. That they feel like they're just so much better than everybody else. These other teams, they play hard. They're scrappy. They're feisty. Yeah, I mean, you can tell they want to win. They're getting after it. Our team's like, yeah, going through the motions. Just kind of relying on superior talent as opposed to playing the game the right way. And I thought they did move the ball better against France than the Australia game and the Serbia game for sure. Kyrie Irving especially. I think he had a dozen assists in the game against France. But they have to improve. And I give credit to Doug Collins, the TV analyst covering the Olympics. He's very objective. He's very honest. I always loved him on TNT. A very good player in his own right, a former NBA coach, knows what he's talking about. And he's pretty honest about what's going on here with this team. You can tell even Coach K got upset at one point in the game against France because the effort level just, it really isn't there. Now, as for the U.S. women, they beat China 105-62. Oh my, is there a mercy rule? Can you end that one like, you know, Little League Baseball, the 10-run rule? Just wave the white flag. 105-62. So I got no bone to pick there. We will get to plenty of positive stories first. But now to the U.S. women's soccer team. Big, big favorite. They had won 3 straight gold medals in the Olympics. Alex Morgan and Kristen Press missed penalty kicks in the shootout, and the U.S. women left Rio without a medal, lost to Sweden in the quarterfinals on Friday. Big time upset here. Morgan had tied the game in the 77th minute. She tied it at 1 thanks to, really it was a lucky goal. A pass goes into the box, hits one of Sweden's defenders in the face. Right in the face, and then goes right down to the foot of Alex Morgan, who puts it in the back of the net. So very, very fortunate there to score. That was the only goal for the U.S. in regulation. They go to penalty kicks, and Sweden wins it 4-3. So the U.S. failed to medal for the first time since women's soccer became an Olympic sport. That happened in 96. And then what made headlines is what goalkeeper Hope Solo did afterwards, criticizing Sweden's style of play. They basically just sat back, played defense. Solo said, quote, "I thought we played a courageous game. Thought we had many opportunities on goal. I think we showed a lot of heart. I'm very proud of this team. I also think we played a bunch of cowards. You know, the best team did not win today. I strongly believe that. I think you saw America's heart. Unfortunately, the better team did not win." Cowards? She's playing the cowards card? The U.S. did dominate if you look at the stats. They outshot Sweden 26-3. Corner kicks 12-3. It wasn't close. The U.S. dominated time of possession. Sweden was content as the gigantic underdog to pack it in and play defense. Can you blame them? I mean, that really was their only shot. I mean, they're not going to play a wide open game against a much more skilled and talented team. That's called strategy, or some may call it strategery. Plus, this is soccer. This happens all the time. Olympics, World Cup, any of the big tournaments in Europe, you see this all the time where teams don't have the skill and they say, hey, we're going to play for a draw, or we're just going to send this baby to penalty kicks and take our chances. Anything can happen there because we know we don't have their talent. We can't play with them. So we're just going to sit back and play defense. And that's what Sweden did. And they ended up winning it. But then for Hope Solo to come out and call the Swedish team cowards, I mean, that shows zero class, no grace, no respect for the game, no respect for your opponent. She really, really needs to grow up. And, you know, we've been saying this for years now. She just looked like a clown. And I'll leave it at that. I mean, very disappointing, not only to lose the game, but then to have one of the players from our country spout off like that. Embarrassing. All right, so let's get to some positives now. 2 words, Michael Phelps. I mean, you run out of adjectives when you're talking about what this guy is doing, and he's doing it at 31 years of age. Now, that's not old to the average Joe, but in the world of swimming and competing at the Olympics, 31 is no spring chicken. Not only did he make the team, he's winning gold medal after gold medal after gold medal. And it finished up with his butterfly leg on the 4x100 medley relay. Nathan Adrian finished it off, but it was Phelps who took the lead. They were trailing in the race when he went into the water. And when he finished, surprise, surprise, the U.S. is out in front. Phelps got his 23rd career gold medal. I mean, let that number settle in for a second. 23 gold medals. He's the most decorated athlete in Olympic history. And their time of 3 minutes, 27.9 seconds, That's an Olympic record. So he goes out not only with a gold, but with an Olympic record time. For his career, 28 medals. Unbelievable. At these games, he won 5 golds and a silver. I'm like, what's wrong with him with the silver there? Pick up the pace, Michael. You know, and again, he's doing it at 31. It's crazy. His fiance in the stands, Nicole Johnson, they're going to get married soon. The 3-month-old Boomer. I mean, Boomer's been getting more airtime than I think Mike Tirico and Bob Costas on NBC. Boomer is on all the time. So we know the deal with Phelps. He initially said, that's it, I'm going to retire after the London Olympics 4 years ago. And then he decided about a year later that he was going to return to the pool, and the rest is history. But now he really sounds convinced that this is it, it's over. And I do think there's a big difference, 35 to 31 in this sport. I mean, that is really tough to do. So my opinion, I think he's done. What's your take on a Michael Phelps? Will he be back in 2020? I say no. What do you say? Let me know on Twitter at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT. And do you agree with me that I think this will be one of the most memorable Olympics of our lifetime because of the star power, the big names, Phelps and Bolt? And we'll get to him in a second. Ledecky as well. I'll talk about her in just a bit here. And then all the controversy swirling around Rio, the site for these games, and the holdup of Lochte and 3 other U.S. swimmers held at gunpoint. Just some crazy, crazy stuff going on. Now to Katie Ledecky. How good was she? First woman to sweep the 200, 400, and 800 freestyle in 48 years, almost half a century. She won all 3, the 200, the 400, and the 800. She is only the 3rd U.S. woman ever to win 4 golds in 1 Olympic Games. And the race that I will never, ever forget was the 800 free. Not only did she win, and I used to swim a little bit, swam in high school, swam in water polo. Even in high school, in a big meet, 2 really good teams, you don't see people winning like that. Swimming is a sport where most races are decided by less than a second. Not seconds, but fractions of a second. Tenths, hundredths. That's usually what decides races at this level. When she's winning in that 800, there's no one in the picture. They had to zoom out just to get the 2nd and 3rd place swimmers in that event. They weren't even close. That does not happen in Olympic swimming. But it did with Katie Ledecky, and she is only 19 years old. What a future there. Now let's get to a track and field. Usain Bolt is not quite as old as Phelps, but he will turn 30 coming up soon, August 21st. The guy isn't slowing down a bit. He won the highly anticipated 100-meter dash in prime time Sunday in a time of 9.81 seconds, which is kind of ho-hum for Bolt. A slow start for him, but a strong finish. Man, does he turn it on. And he makes it look so easy. That's what I appreciate. You may not be a fan of track and field. You may not be a fan of swimming. But I appreciate greatness. And that's what we're seeing in these games with Phelps and Ledecky and Usain Bolt. In some of the preliminary races and the semifinals, the guy is looking around like it's a Sunday walk in the park. Like he's on a stroll, you know? I mean, he's looking. Is anybody on my left? Nope. Look to my right. Anybody there? No. I mean, you're supposed to go straight ahead. That's how fast this guy is. He makes it look easy. He won his record-setting 3rd straight title in the 100, which is a big-time event. It's his 7th gold medal overall. He beat Justin Gatlin from America by 0.08 seconds, but you know, it really wasn't that close. At the end, you see Bolt taking time to punch his chest there. It looked for a second there like Gatlin may get him, but what a finishing kick by Usain Bolt. And he has a chance for two more gold medals. His favorite race is the 200. That is coming up on Thursday. And then Saturday night's the 4x100 relay. That's always a lot of fun to watch, too. But it's the ease that he gets this done that really impresses me. This is episode 430 of The Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on grizzlyproductions.tv. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes. Some more noteworthy stories from Rio. The U.S. women's gymnastics team dominated the team competition. That wasn't even close. 19-year-old Simone Biles has become a star. Sunday, she won the vault competition. She is the first U.S. woman to do that. And she's the first American gymnast to win three gold medals in a single Olympics. We're hearing a lot of firsts here, which is another reason why I think this is going to be a historic Olympic Games. Biles has that great smile, great personality, great attitude, very, very energetic. I think endorsement deals should be coming her way anytime now, probably in bunches. And then back to the pool, how about Simone Manuel, who became the first African-American woman to win an Olympic gold in swimming? She tied for first in the 100-meter freestyle. Then she won three more medals, including a second gold when she anchored the 400-meter medley relay. She said, representing the U.S. was the greatest honor she could ever have, praised her family. I mean, that stuff is great to hear. Not just a superb athlete, but an awesome person, too. To golf, which was back in the Olympics for the first time since 1904 in St. Louis, and all we heard coming into the games was who wasn't playing. The top four ranked men in the world withdrew. Padraig Harrington took a little shot. He referred to them as sheep. Well, the final round was really, really exciting. What a duel between Justin Rose of Great Britain and Henrik Stenson of Sweden, who we've heard a lot of on the tour. They went toe-to-toe for more than 5 hours. All 12,000 tickets were sold. Every ticket that was available was sold. Neither player led by more than one stroke until the final hole. Rose hit a pitch within 3 feet of the cup. He birdied the hole. Stenson bogeyed it and settled for silver. Rose shot a 4-under-67. And how about American Matt Kuchar? Cooch, as they like to call him. He posted a 63 to earn the bronze and said, "I've never been so happy with a third-place finish in my life." So there's a guy who is thrilled to be at the Olympics. And fans lined up on both sides of the fairway. Rose gave a big Tiger Woods-esque fist pump at the end of the round. British fans were waving their flag around the 18th green. It really was a fantastic ending. Now, would I prefer to see the top players in there, you know, Day and Spieth and McIlroy and those guys? Sure, but still turned out to be a real nice event. And golf, I think, is going to stick around. To tennis, Andy Murray won gold in men's singles. He defeated Del Potro of Argentina. What a run he had. Murray won it in 4 sets. Murray is the first men's tennis player to win back-to-back Olympic singles titles. Another first. So congratulations to Andy Murray. We have a lot to cover today on episode number 430 of the Sports Report. So let's get to baseball here. Giancarlo Stanton likely done for the season with a groin injury. Don Mattingly said after Sunday's game when they beat the White Sox 5-4 that an MRI showed something serious and Stanton would not play again this season. It'd be the third straight year in which his season has been cut short because of an injury. Team also put left-hander Adam Conley on the DL with finger tendonitis in his pitching hand, so more bad news there for Miami. When it rains, it pours. The Marlins are having a nice season, 61-56. They're only a half game behind the Cardinals for the second and final wild card spot. Stanton got hurt Saturday. He made an awkward slide trying to stretch a single into a double in the ninth inning against the White Sox, and he was tagged out for the final out of the game. He's first on the team in homers, RBIs, slugging percentage. He's got 25 homers, 70 RBIs. I found this very interesting, though. I think you'd be surprised to know Miami's record without Stanton is what? 14 games without him this year. You know what their record is? 11-3. With him, they're under 500. They're 50-53 with him. Without him, they're 11-3. Figure that out. And the batting average in those games with Stanton, 268. Without him, 295. That did surprise me. They're trying to get to the playoffs for the first time since 2003. Now, part two of this story. And, you knew his name was going to come up, didn't you? President of Baseball Operations Michael Hill said the Marlins are discussing whether to reach out to Alex Rodriguez, who was released by the Yankees on Saturday. By the way, how about the farewell ceremony for A-Rod? Do you think it maybe was a little bit fitting that a cloud rolled in and then the rain came down on A-Rod down on the field? But back to this story with the Marlins apparently interested in A-Rod. I am so done with this guy, and I'm a Yankees fan, but I put him in the same class with Lance Armstrong and Ryan Braun. A total phony. Fraud, liar, whatever you want to call him. I mean, not only did he lie, but he criticized others who dared to question, which is something Lance Armstrong did and Ryan Braun did, going after the guy who was handling his sample. I mean, what did that poor guy ever do? And you have Ryan Braun attacking him. So I have no time for A-Rod. He was a great talent, no question about it, but he also was a cheater and he was a repeat offender. Our country's very forgiving. If you come out, make a mistake, own it, people in our country will forgive you. But when you constantly lie and lie and lie, like A-Rod and Lance and Ryan Braun, sorry, no time for you. The guy's 41 now. He grew up in South Florida. He still lives there, which is, I guess, why some media bobbleheads are making a big deal about this. But he hit 200 this season. He couldn't even get on the field. And, you know, I know he only needs 4 home runs to get to 700, but that's not the concern of the Marlins. They're trying to get into the playoffs here. Plus, he hasn't played the field. He's barely played the field since 2013. So why would Miami want a 200 hitter who can't play the field? They're in the National League. You got no DH. He's got to play somewhere. And on top of that, you think it might be a little bit of a distraction? Just a teeny tiny bit. This story needs to go away. I mean, if I'm the Marlins, I don't think twice. I want no part of Alex Rodriguez. This is episode 430. Maybe you disagree. That's fine. You can weigh in on Twitter at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. Now, last Monday, you heard the Best Of show, and that's because I had a little trip out to Pittsburgh. I was there last Saturday, got back around 1:30 a.m. on Thursday. I went with my buddy Chris Blum, who is the head baseball coach at Kutztown, and two of our other friends, Brad and Scott. We had a great time, good group of guys. I pay them well to hang out with me, what can I say? But Chris was an assistant coach at Kutztown University, which is a very, very good Division II baseball program here in southeast Pennsylvania. And Ryan Vogelsong played for Kutztown University. So Chris knows him really, really well. And each summer, he tries to catch up with Ryan. So we're going out there because Ryan's now back in the rotation. You may remember he got hit in the face by a pitch early this season, had surgery, broke bones in his face. Well, one night we were out to dinner. We saw pictures from the day it happened, and it looked like Rocky Balboa against Drago when Rocky was getting pummeled in the early rounds of that fight, except this was no movie. Very, very scary scene. But Ryan's back and throwing well. In fact, tonight he's going to pitch in San Francisco. So he's going up against his former team. Now, they love him in San Fran because he helped them to win two World Series championships. But he's throwing well. His ERA is down to 2.67, but just glad to see him back after getting hit in the face like that. So we went out with Ryan briefly after the game on Saturday. They played the Reds. Then Sunday was a day game, so we went out to dinner with Ryan and his wife and their son. And then on Tuesday, Monday was an off day. Last Tuesday, we got to go down on the field at PNC Park for batting practice. That was awesome. Clint Hurdle, the Pirates manager, came over, shook our hands. Dave Jouse, the Pirates bench coach, he was chatting us up for a while. We spoke briefly with Travis Jankowski of the San Diego Padres. They were in town. He was a first-round pick in 2012. He's from Lancaster County, went to Lancaster Catholic High School, not far from where I live. He now starts in center field for the Padres, and he stole home again in the series against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mark McGwire, who is San Diego's bench coach, saw him right behind the cage. She'll watch him BP. He's got a gray beard now. Really has thinned down. You can't call him Big Mac. Maybe medium-sized or little Mac, but not super-sized anymore. And then Bob Ryan, the longtime writer for the Boston Globe, he was there watching a BP, and turns out he was staying at our hotel, which was right next to the Console Energy Center where the Penguins play. So watching batting practice was really, really cool. I'll tell you who put on a show, Brett Wallace of the Padres. He was hitting balls out to right field out of the stadium, not second deck, out of the stadium, gone, goodbye, see ya. And what a beautiful ballpark. It's a smaller park, only seats about 38,000, but what a view of the Pittsburgh skyline. And we were all over Pittsburgh, downtown, North Shore, Mount Washington, Station Square, Carson Street, the one and only Carson Street. Went to some great restaurants, had some good steaks, had the biggest sandwich I've ever had in my life. This thing had chicken, pork, ham, everything on it, even an egg. They threw an egg on top of it as well. It was as big as my head. But thanks to Ryan and his wife, Nicole, for taking some time out to hang out with us. And I hope he pitches well the rest of the way. He's been through an awful, awful lot. It's a tremendous story. Should make a movie about the guy. High draft pick from a small school like Kutztown, struggles, injured, has Tommy John surgery, ends up coming back, struggling even more, out of baseball, pitching for Japan over there for years, gets a shot with the Giants, and what do you know? Becomes an all-star and wins two World Series rings. How awesome is that? Now he's back with the Pirates, and he's pitching well, back in the rotation there. So, Ryan Vogelsong, wish him well. To football here, final story on a lighter note, wrapping up episode number 430 of the Sports Report podcast with you Mondays in the podcast section of iTunes and, of course, on the Grizz, grizzlyproductions.tv. Jeff Fisher, did you see the first episode of Hard Knocks on HBO? It aired last Tuesday, and Jeff Fisher was cursing like a sailor. Well, the next day, he got a phone call. Not from the owner of the Rams, not from Commissioner Goodell, nope. He heard the word Jeffrey in the phone call. Not Jeff, but Jeffrey. And right away he knew something was wrong. Guess who was on the other end? His mom. That's right. And she had heard enough. She was tired of the cursing. Fisher had addressed the Rams in a morning meeting. Star receiver Tavon Austin had been carted off when he cramped up after only eating two bananas at lunch the day before. So he was annoyed by that, not having his best receiver on the field to practice. And receiver Deion Long was cut because he had a brain cramp and invited a female guest into his room on the first night. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. Man, oh man, you have rocks for brains? Jeez, so Fisher's hot, and he goes off talking about how little things are important, and he's not going 7-9 or 8-8 or 9-7. This team is too much talent. He's not settling for this baloney. except he didn't use the word baloney. He said, quote, "We had some 7-9 bull blank this morning. Now Deion is gone. That is 7-9 bull blank, and we don't need it," end quote. The Rams were, you guessed it, 7-9 last season. So remember, kids, the moral of the story, mom is always watching. Choose your words wisely. NFL coach getting reamed out by his mom. That is classic. Hard Knocks is back. Love that show. So we covered a lot of topics today. The Stanton injury, a lot on the Olympics, and you can weigh in on all of it on Twitter at the Sports RPT. The Sports RPT on Twitter. I'll talk to you again next Monday. Stay cool, everybody. Have a great week. I'm Paul Roberts. This has been episode number 430 of the Sports Report on GrizzlyProductions.tv and iTunes.